Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
Well, in these times where we are starved for sports and grateful to lap up whatever we can. The all-time Broncos Madden team has been released.
Really?
On defense, you have Elvis Dumervil, Simon Fletcher, Trevor Price, and Rulon Jones up front.
Okay.
Linebackers, Von Miller, Tom Jackson, Carl Mecklenburg, Brandy Gradishar. Cornerbacks, Champ Bailey, Chris Harris Jr., Aqib Talib, safeties, Steve Atwater, Dennis Smith, kickers, Matt Prater over Jason Elam, and the punter is Tom Rubin. they didn't spell it ruin, they spelled it Rubin. Tom Rubin, like the sandwich. I could go for a good Rubin right now, couldn't you? Uh-oh, do we lose Mark? As we get him back. He's at home, by the way. We're practicing safe social distancing here at the Fan. We have one host here and one host broadcasting from home. I'm here. Scott DeHuff is through the glass. On the offensive side of the ball, John Elway, Terrell Davis, Floyd Little, Rod Smith, DT, Ed McCaffrey, and Emmanuel Sanders, your receivers. Tight end, Shannon Sharp. And your offensive line is Matt Lepsis, Keith Bishop, Ryan Clady, Tom Nalen, and Mark Schlereth. In at guard. So, there you go. The all-time Broncos Madden team as released by the folks at Madden. So, we dive into everything we can get in the sports world that we can latch on to. And there you go. The all-time Broncos Madden team featuring Mark Schlereth at guard.
It's a good feature to have, Mike.
Congratulations.
Good. Thank you. I appreciate that. You know what? It's well-deserved. I'm not going to lie about it. I feel really strong. I feel good. I feel very happy about what's going on here. I seem to be running through Comrex machines like poop through a goose. So I don't know. I've got a gremlin in my house apparently because they just turn off when they get to my house.
Is it? I'm picturing like a scene from Christmas Vacation. You know, like you've got everything set up, and then like Lisa just went and ran the washing machine or something.
Yeah, I honestly can't tell you why. I didn't get a power surge, like the computer didn't go off, nothing happened. It just like clicks off and then nothing. You know, I'd like to be able to tell you what's going on. but you know, when it comes to it's kind of like, you know, my skills when it comes, I have certain skills, Mike. I'm like Liam Neeson in that kidnapping movie.
That's right.
I developed a certain set of skills.
Yes, you have a particular set of skills. Yes.
I have a particular set of skills, right.
Yeah. Well,
the one skill that, like, when it comes to computer stuff and like, fixing cars, if it doesn't have an on-off button, pretty much not going to be able to fix it.
No.
Yeah.
Well, we've got you. That's the important thing. And I know the Huff is working feverishly to get everything cleaned up. But, I want to mention this because folks, I don't know if you can imagine our boy Stink doing a backflip, but Todd McShay came out with a 2-round mock draft that literally, if this happened, would cause Mark Schlereth to want to do or attempt a backflip, and that is at number 15, he has the Broncos taking Andrew Thomas, offensive tackle from Georgia. Why would you do a backflip why would you attempt to do a backflip?
Well, because I think that would, one, it would fill the kind of the need of surrounding Drew Lock with weapons. You know, that whole weaponry, we need to get him more weapons. I mean, what you need to get him an offensive line that can protect him. That, to me, is getting a guy weapons. So, like, that needs to be first and foremost on the list of things to do. And here's a guy that played at Georgia, played in a system that translates well to the NFL, is aggressive, can move, is a great athlete. And I was telling you this earlier, man. I've been reaching out to coaches that I know that are sequestered in their homes, just like the rest of us are sequestered in our homes. And the only thing these guys do is watch film. So, you know, different position coaches that I have connection with, I call those guys and say, hey, man, what do you think of, you know, give me these top five offensive tackles or top 10 offensive tackles. Tell me about your guards. Tell me about what you've seen on film. And one guy that I trust immensely told me when it comes to Andrew Thomas, like, he was the favorite guy. He was not only great to work out and all those things, but on the board, he just understood football. He understood defenses. He understood what they were trying to accomplish as an offense. Like, all the things that you're looking for in a football player, he had those all. And those things, man, that's, you know, what you're looking for, Mike. And so, I'm just telling you, that would make me so happy. Because I think it's part of what has to happen. Listen, you know this as well as I do. Athletics and being an athlete in this game is great. You have to be athletic. I get all those things. But the bottom line is you had best understand, football. That's what sets guys apart. And your ability to understand the game, your ability to, your ability to adjust based upon what you see on a football field. Those are the things that have to happen. And here's a guy, you know, telling me that does this for a living, that coaches in the NFL for a living, that this is my guy. Like, this guy just blew me away with his knowledge of the game. Like, we need that. That's something that needs to happen.
And,
so.
And I think that you know, people talk, we just had Mike Kliss on, and he said, well, the Broncos need to get weapons for Drew Lock. And I love the way that you have, not to pump your tires, but I love the way that you have made the case that an offensive linemen are weapons for right. a quarterback, and that you continue to use as your example, and I'm going to keep bringing it up because it explains so much that what Kansas City is able to do. Yes, they have weapons. They have a number of receivers that can go out and make plays for Patrick Mahomes. But they have an offensive line that can hold up that allows them to send four or five guys out into the pattern on any given play. And what about the Broncos offensive line? Okay, so what I'm hearing is they need speed. Okay, you got to go get Henry Ruggs. He's a burner. He's a speed guy. And with Henry Ruggs, you're going to be able to throw the ball 40, 50 yards downfield. How is that going to happen if your quarterback's running for his life or is on his back?
Right.
So
it doesn't.
It is a part of the weaponry that you're trying to put around your quarterback.
Right. Mike, it's one of those things. If you go back to the Super Bowl and you go watch like the NFL films version of that third down and 15 play, they convert and they call it WASP. And part of their concern was, hey man, we're not going to be able, to protect it. We're not going to be able to run that long a route and protect it. And Patrick was just like Mahomes. He's like, no, I'll bail us out. I got us. And where your normal drop on that particular throw is about 11 yards. It's a 7-step drop, with a hitch. So it's 11, maybe drift. He dropped initially back to 14. So two things happened. One, he gets an extra, 3 yards away. That's an extra 9 feet of real estate he bought, which is, for a defensive lineman, that's another 2 steps before you get to the quarterback. So he got there another couple of steps. He buys himself a little time, and you got to have the arm talent to be able to make that throw, which Drew Lock has in spades. But that's understanding the elements, understanding your football team, understanding the opponent that you're playing, and then having the physical skills to do it. But it started with understanding, hey, this is the play. This is what we have to accomplish. And this is what I have to do to be able to be successful within that, within the context of that play. A lot of things going on there, but again, it, you know, it starts from the neck up, Mike.
All right, coming up, we've got four down territory at 7:30, but coming up next, I'm going to continue to shred the myth. It's a myth that the Broncos don't have enough weapons for Drew Lock. That's next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.
You know, Mark, if there's one thing about this whole wide receiver debate is that bugs me is this notion that you have to get more weapons for Drew Lock. When I look at Cortland Sutton and Noah Fant, and I'm like, well, isn't that the definition of what you're trying to develop? You have in Cortland Sutton, a guy who through 2 years, would you say that the arrow is most definitely going up with this guy, that we have yet to see him even reach his full potential, and all he did last year was go for 72 catches and over 1,000 yards?
Yeah, 72 catches, by the way, with three different quarterbacks.
Right.
I mean,
three below average quarterbacks.
Correct. Three different and Meanwhile, early in the season for the first, 8-10 weeks, you're number one. Well, it was first 7 weeks, I suppose, because I think I did that game in San Francisco week 8, where your quarterback, your number one receiver was Emmanuel Sanders. So he did that for half the season where he wasn't the number one intended target. 72 for over 1,000. So yeah, he is definitely trending upwards, and he was raw coming in. I mean, he was a raw second rounder, physical specimen, but a raw second rounder that, you know, that had to learn the NFL game. He certainly learned it well, and he certainly, you know, burst on the scene last year, so to speak, with what he was able to do. So yeah, okay. Absolutely.
All right,
the arrow's
so
trending up.
He is a weapon. All right. He is in NFL offensive football lexicon. He is a weapon. Okay. Noah Fant, who was drafted in the first round. Noah Fant's rookie season was 40 catches, 562 yards, and 3 touchdowns. I went back and looked at the first years of tight ends that are widely regarded to be the best tight ends in football right now. Did you know that Fant's rookie season was better than Darren Waller's, better than Zach Ertz's, better than Mark Andrews, better than Austin Hooper, and basically identical to George Kittle's? The only rookie season put up by a tight end that would surpass what you got from Fant in his rookie season was Travis Kelce. That's it. All the top tight ends in football that everybody agree are the top tight ends in football, Noah Fant had a better rookie season than their rookie season. So, and he's a first-round pick. So this notion that the Broncos are in desperate need to get more weapons for Drew Lock, they feature right now a soon-to-be third-year and soon-to-be second-year pass-catching tandem of a wide receiver and a tight end that a lot of teams would be looking for. So let's stop with this notion that they have no weapons and that they desperately need to go get more weapons. They have two, right, that are trending exactly the way you want young offensive playmakers to trend.
I don't think there's any question about that. I think the question with Noah Fant is, like, how much is he going to improve? How much of a complete player can he become? I think those are the things you have to ask. Now, in this offense that we're going to run, maybe he doesn't need to become quite as complete. Like, it's not what they're asking George Kittle to do, who probably does more than any tight end in football. not probably, he does more than any tight end in football. The guy's phenomenal. But this is going to be a different offense. The issue that you get into, and this is what people, you know, why people get, you know, why people get their panties in a wad over this, Mike, is because they hear the propensity for this offense to be three wides 76% of the time or whatever it is. And we need more wide receivers. And I agree with that. You do need, you know, to develop more wide receivers. Now, is there somebody on your roster that you think is Tim Patrick going to be the guy that steps up and becomes a legit number two? Like, can he do, probably not. Like, you've got to go in that direction. The thing that frustrates me is when I hear people say, well, you just need speed. You just need, that's why Henry Ruggs makes so much sense. You just gotta have that speed. Gotta have that speed. And I'm like, I just don't buy into that. Hey, it's all about speed. Yeah, you want a guy that has, you know, that has speed and a guy that can run and do all those things. But that doesn't necessarily mean you're gonna be great. You know, like I want a complete football player. I want a guy that has speed, that has the ability to be a threat running the football with all the jet sweep stuff and all the things that are, you know, that are part of today's NFL. Yeah, I certainly want that. But I gotta have a guy that can run routes and that can get open and can do all those things. Like that to me, when you just talk about a pure speed guy, you know, that's that cat that that the Rams drafted in the first round, paid a bunch of money, and now plays in Dallas, you know, Austin, right? What's the kid's name?
Tavon Austin.
Tavon Austin. That's that kid. Like, that kid is one dimensional. Like, that speed guy that people are talking about, if you want that, that's your third wide receiver, right? Or your fourth guy. That's your gadget guy. Like, for you to take a gadget guy, you shouldn't be taking a gadget guy with the 15th overall pick. Hey, let's run a few. Okay, how many gadget plays do you run at any particular time during a game? Three? So we're going to take the 15th overall pick on a guy who's a third receiver out of Alabama because he runs fast, and we're going to give him three gadget plays a game.
So Ruggs is a gadget guy.
Well, I think he's probably more than a gadget guy, but that to me is when you just talk about speed. That really is an ability to affect the defense and you know, and do all those things. You're not talking about a polished receiver. You're talking about a guy that's a gadget guy that you hope develops. That shouldn't be like at 15 overall, you should be getting a number one guy or, you know, a guy that has the potential to be number one that you're going to play at number two, but not, hey, this is a gadget guy that we hope develops into a good third receiver.
Yeah, remember, if you draft a receiver at 15, it is with the understanding that you believe he's going to be your number one guy. And to that I say, you already got a number one guy. You already got a number one guy in Cortland Sutton, and you already have a trending in the right direction after 1 year, number one tight end as well. So you tell me how you're going to draft a receiver. He's going to be a number one. Cortland Sutton will still play at a number one level. And Noah Fant will all play at a number one level. It's not going to happen. There's just not enough balls to go around. So automatically, somebody's getting wasted. Somebody's potential, somebody's talent is getting wasted. That's why it doesn't make sense. Coming up next, four down territory. We know that the Broncos can't compete with the Chiefs yet. But it's being able to rise above the Chargers and the Raiders and both those teams making quarterback news. We'll tell you about it next.
Are you ready for some football?
This is four down territory.
Words cannot say how much I truly love you.
Donkey Kong Sue.
Double team, leaping high, falling hard.
Yo soy fiesta.
Hurry. On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan. First down.
Montez going that way. Chenault for the end zone. Touchdown, Colorado.
Pac-12 Network there with a highlight. Todd McShay's latest two-round draft. Oh, music to my ears. Sign me up. Mark, he's got Andrew Thomas, tackle, Georgia, for the Broncos at 15, and then he has him taking Laviska Shenault in the second round. Now, Shenault, we know how dynamic he is when healthy, but he has battled some injuries. He just had a core injury surgery that was kind of being given as the excuse, well, a legitimate excuse, for his you know, kind of shoddy combine showing. So if they came away with Andrew Thomas and Laviska Shenault, would that be a good first two rounds for the Broncos?
Oh, I think it would be huge, Mike. I think it'd be a huge first couple of rounds for the Broncos. And listen, man, this guy had some type of torn abdomen or some type of you know, core injury that required surgery and still ran, I believe, a 4.56. Like, you know, I mean, those are legit numbers, and you see what he did go back to his junior year. I think it was his junior or sophomore, whatever it was. Like, he's legit. He's a football player, man. That would be a great fit. And it would go back to, you know, both of our theories that there are first round talent guys that you're going to find in the second round at the receiver position. So why would you take one at 15?
By the way,
this makes too much sense.
By the way, Bucky Brooks, who I know you have a lot of respect for, he has Shenault as his number four receiver in this entire class. So if you think of the big three as Judy, Ruggs, CeeDee Lamb, well, you know, one person's opinion, he's got LaViska at number four. Next in four down territory.
Second down.
Wednesday rolled around and we were able to talk to Tom Brady. We had a great conversation, Bruce and I. We talked to him for over an hour and a half, and he made it clear in the conversation that he was very, very interested. It was almost like a recruitment on his part, telling us why it would make sense for him to come to Tampa Bay.
That is Buccaneers GM Jason Light on ESPN saying that it was more Tom Brady courting the Bucs than the other way around. Is that cool? Is that refreshing, or is it kind of sad and pathetic that the GOAT had to go recruit the Bucks?
I think it's cool because it shows humility. It shows a guy that really, you know, to me, just really wants to play football. I think that part is really cool. I also think, why does it take an hour and a half for that guy to recruit you guys? He's like, no, I really want to play here. No, seriously, what's going on? Right? Like, what do you? You're like, seriously, you're just using this to drive up the price else places, you know? What's happening here? No, I really want to play here. You guys have, you know, Mike Evans and Godwin, and you got, no, really, why? You want to come to Tampa? Like, what's going on? Like, why did it take an hour and a half? They didn't believe he wanted to work for them. They didn't believe he wanted to come to Tampa. They're like, you're just driving the price up. That's all you're really doing. Like, what? That was, I think it's cool. I think it shows some humility. I think it shows a lack of ego, if you will. If you're the GOAT, you have to go out and recruit.
Well,
if
you're also
the GOAT, you have to go. Go ahead.
I think it also shows how much you wanted to get away from Belichick. Now, this was all said in motion because Belichick didn't want Brady. You know, didn't want to give him a 2-year deal. But
oh, hey, by the way,
it also showed that Brady wanted to move on from Belichick.
By the way, since we're on this topic, do you know that? And I found this hard to believe. You know that Bill Belichick had coached, you know, the whole is it Brady, is it Belichick debate? You know, he coached 100 games in the NFL as a head coach without Brady.
Yeah.
Did 100 games. You know what his record is?
Yeah, well below 500.
42-58.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I've always said in the debate, Brady or Belichick, it's always Brady. It's always the quarterback. Every great coach quarterback tandem, it's always the quarterback. Always. Next in four down territory.
Third down. Anywhere I go, I'm happy. And I know it sounds kind of cheesy and politically correct, but it's not. I'm excited to wherever I go. I just want to play football for as long as I can. And to be given a chance to be here at this place is enough for me. And I'm excited to be here. I want to get better, do everything I can to play football for as long as I can.
Well, that is Justin Herbert, or Hebert, or whatever your name is, as he had virtual meeting with the Raiders yesterday. They can't do it face-to-face, so it's on Zoom or FaceTime or Skype or whatever you want to do. But wait a minute now. What's John Gruden doing here? I mean, he's got Derek Carr. He's got Marcus Mariota. So why is he kicking the tires on Justin Herbert?
Well, because he thinks that Derek Carr has potentially reached a ceiling that Marcus Mariota is
definitely,
you know, a college quarterback, and he is seeing if there's somebody out there that tickles his quarterbacking fancy. He just wants to, like, He just wants to make sure the guy knows football. If he fell to them, if he fell to the Raiders, would that be an option? I mean, I think that's what he's looking at. I don't think he's necessarily really thinking about drafting a quarterback unless somebody just blows him away, but he wants to do his due diligence because you know John Madden, man. There's not a quarterback he doesn't love. He loves them all.
Next in four down territory.
Fourth down.
Takes the handoff. Pushing right, wide open, right corner, caught, touchdown, Chargers. Virgil Green, Tyrod Taylor.
Knock on wood. Chargers radio right there. Tyrod Taylor wants his chance. Tyrod Taylor believes if given the chance to be the quarterback of the Bolts, well, here's what he said. Quote, we have a lot of talent on our team. If I am the guy that would be calling the shots, I know for sure that we'll go out and turn a lot of heads.
You know, I tend to believe that. I tend to believe that they could be a playoff team with Tyrod Taylor. Hell, the last time he got a chance to quarterback a team through the majority of the season, he went to the playoffs with the Bills. So I believe that could happen, Mike. You know, really interesting. I was watching Cowherd yesterday. We had Cowherd on, and he was talking about, you know, people's fascination about Cam Newton. And how everybody's like, oh, it's the Chargers. That's where he fits the best. You know, take him to L.A., the Chargers. You know that in the last, whatever it is, 30 games that these two guys have started, that Tyrod Taylor has a better record than does Cam Newton. Cam Newton being a, you know, superstar quarterback and Tyrod Taylor being a guy that was a placeholder, even, you know, while I was in Cleveland or while I was in
Mark,
Buffalo.
I'm telling you, when you first started talking, and you brought this up a long time ago, that you came away from doing a Chargers game with the belief that the Chargers felt that if Tyrod Taylor had been their quarterback last year instead of Phillip Rivers, that they would have made the playoffs. I kind of eye-rolled at that. But then I went back and looked at his 3 years with the Bills in 15, 16, and 17. Guy was a, like, 63% passer. He threw for 51 touchdowns to only 16 interceptions. Plus, during that span, he averaged about 550 yards rushing and another 14 touchdowns for the Bills with not a lot of talent right around them. So, you know what? You're kind of convincing me that they'd be in pretty capable hands if they decide to go with Taylor.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if they go get that kid, that the Love kid, you know, the quarterback, and put him in the same position they were in Cleveland when they drafted you know, Baker Mayfield, and just have him as a spot holder. Or you know, or if they decide, hey man, we're a good football team, we're a really good defense, if we went out and drafted a left tackle and said, Tyrod, we're going to give you, you know, we're going to give you an opportunity to be our quarterback, and then maybe go khaki pants on him. Like, ooh, okay. That could be a really good strategy, Mike.
Yeah.
I don't think khaki pants is ever a bad strategy. I think it's always a good strategy.
It's always a good strategy. Always a good strategy. You can never go wrong. Coming up, that'll do it for Four Down Territory. We got question mark coming up at 8 o'clock. But up next, my latest column that is going to upset a lot of people.
Oh, no.
But I think I make a really good case, and I'll share it with you next. Mark, never let it be said that I don't say nice things about my man D-Mac. I enjoy his killing you with truth segment in the afternoon that he does every afternoon. My latest column at 1043thefan.com is kind of like that, and it's not a popular take, but I want you to hear me out as I make my case as to why this awkward attempt to restart the NBA and NHL seasons needs to stop, and these seasons need to be called off right now. Okay, let me make my case. Just bear with me a little bit, okay? Nuggets and Avalanche both played their last games on March 11th, which, by the way, today is March 31st. Does that seem like forever ago?
Yes.
Does March 11th seem like forever ago?
I was traveling on March 11th. I was flying home on March 11th.
Right.
It does. It seems like 100 years ago.
It was like 20 days ago, 3 weeks ago. It feels like forever. So let's try and be optimistic and say that sports is given the all clear by mid-May. That means both teams will probably be given a week to 2 weeks to get ready to resume. So let's say June 1st is the restart date. That means the Avs and Nugs will have been sitting on their hands for 2 months before they start practicing. They will not have been training like they normally would. Their preparedness to go out and play an NBA or NHL game will be well below their normal standards. That will lead to potential injuries and substandard play. Next question is, do both teams finish their regular seasons? They're both playoff locks and have about, you know, 17 games or so left in the regular season. But the Nuggets still have a great chance of overtaking the Clippers for the second seed in the West, which would mean home court advantage in the second round. The Avs still have a chance to pass the Blues for the best record in the Western Conference and home ice throughout the entire playoffs. There are NBA and NHL teams that still have a chance to make the playoffs and the added revenue that goes with it. Are you just going to end the regular season just like that? Is that fair? Not to me, it isn't. Now, how legit are these playoffs going to be when they involve teams and players who've done very little for over 2.5 months? Is it going to be good basketball and hockey? Will we have the true best of seven series, or will it be shortened to best of fives, best of threes? I've even seen one model suggested where it's an NCAA March Madness, one game, winner moves on, loser stays home model. And I'm just getting warmed up here. Have I mentioned that in order to cut down on travel and multiple cities that will still be reeling from fighting the effects of the virus, the NBA and NHL may choose to play a number of games involving multiple teams all in one city. So let's say there's a city that isn't hit as hard as others. I'll pick Phoenix, let's say, for example. The NBA could decide to have the Nuggets Rockets, Clippers Mavs, Jazz Thunder, and Lakers Memphis series all played there. And the league would then find another city to play the Eastern Conference matchups. Same with the NHL, that Avs Stars first round series could be part of a bunch of hockey played in Minnesota, for example. And let's not forget, none of these games will be played in front of fans. You're nuts if you think sports will resume play to packed houses. So, Mark, what you're left with is this feeling of we're trying to force the rest of the season in. We're desperately trying to get some kind of a playoff, some kind of a champion any way we can. And I'm here to tell you, it's not going to be fair. It's not going to feel right. It's not going to include any of the elements that go into crowning a champion. It's all a rushed, forced exercise that I think would be better off just calling it off, call it for what it is, a consequence of something that we've never seen before, and just understand that this is something that's going to have to be sacrificed. What do you think?
I think that, one, I would say life isn't fair. Who cares that it's not fair? It's fair. Here's where I would argue with you, Mike. It is fair because everybody has to deal with the same. Everybody has to deal with the same thing. So to me, who's kept themselves in the best shape possible? Who's got the greatest mental toughness? Like that to me is championship caliber stuff anyhow. So I don't really care about the fairness of it. I don't care about any of that stuff. Do I want to see sports come back? Do I want to see a champion crowned? Do I want to see some type of, you know, truncated season, you know, where they play a couple of games, get themselves ready, and then they start a playoff? Yeah, I'd love to see it. And regardless, whatever the format is, I'm in. I want to watch that.
See, I disagree with that. I think early on, you're right, because the games would be on TV at the start, people will ravenously gobble up whatever's given to them because we will have missed it for so long. But you know what? After a bit, the novelty will wear off and it's like, wow, these games are being played in empty arenas. This sucks. And you're asking teams to, I mean, are you telling me that home court advantage, home ice advantage doesn't make a big difference in who moves on and who goes home? None of that will be in play. I get what you're saying, that the rules, you know, the bar will be set evenly for everybody, but it is so far outside the norm of how we normally would crown a champion that all it feels like is that we're just trying to do it just so we can say we finished. And right. whoever wins, whoever loses, I mean, is it going to really feel like you're watching legitimate playoff basketball or playoff hockey? And by the way, the other thing about all this, too, that is not being talked enough about is that if you try to resume these seasons and you try to have a legitimate playoff, the likelihood is it will not wrap up until late August, maybe even early September. And in the case of hockey, they start their training camp for next season in September. Basketball doesn't start that long after. So you would be running right into basically turning around starting another season. And where does that make sense? How does that make sense? So I get it. We want to get sports back, and we'll take it supposedly any way we can get it. In this case, yeah, get baseball started up. Get football started up. But in the case of the NBA and NHL, I think it's time to start talking about these two in the past tense.
I don't see here. Let's do a little role play, okay? Okay, because right now what you sound like is general managers and scouts complaining about the NFL draft. And I'm going to be Roger Goodell, okay? And here's what I say to you. Shut up and quit whining and deal with it. That's what I'm telling you right now. It's like, hey, people want to see it. And these sports leagues want to get back up. And you know what?
Mark, come on. There's a big difference between conducting a fantasy football type draft that we've all been able to do, you know, remotely with our buddies versus going out and actually playing games.
I totally understand that. But I think, like, I truly think that one of the things that we're seeing in our society for all those people who, you know, poo-poo the games and, you know, and basically brush aside sports and all the people that want sports eradicated. Like, this is such a huge part of Americana. It's such a huge part of our culture. And I think it's an incredibly important part of what we are socially, the way that it brings connectivity to groups of people, to communities. I think all that stuff is important, and it's an important part of us being as normal as possible. So I think there is, I just think, Mike, I think it's a far greater part of our society than I think the average person wants to give it credit
and
for.
Mark, and Mark, so, I completely agree with you, and guess what? There's unlimited amount of, if we're able to resume back to normal, which again, as I laid out, is not as easy as people try to make it, this idea right. That, okay, sports is back, let's go play. I mean, there's all kinds of ramifications. I completely agree with you about the role that sports plays. And guess what? If all goes according to plan, you know, you won't get a full baseball season, but you'll get a really good chunk of the baseball season that everybody will be starting off equal. You'll have golf tournaments that will be still played, tennis tournaments that will still be played. You'll have a football season, college and pro football season ramping up. And all of these events will give us exactly what you just said we need, but they'll feel regular. They won't come with as many asterisks and awkwardness and a feeling of this just isn't the right way to crown a champion that you'd be getting if you try to restart basketball and hockey.
Well, I just don't look at it like, hey, this is not the standard operating procedure and we're not getting the same kind of, you know, true champion or whatever. I think dealing with elements and overcoming issues is part of a championship core and a championship spirit. And so I guess I just look at it differently from that aspect. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I also understand, like, I was on FS1 yesterday via Skype, and Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk put out there, you know, that they should move the NFL season to Greenbrier, West Virginia, and play the whole season. Create football fields and play the whole season, have all 32 NFL teams just hunker down there, like completely quarantined.
Right.
Like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Like, really, we haven't even flattened the curve
We haven't even let all the work that we're doing from a quarantine standpoint across the United States, we haven't even let it have its effect. And we've already, you know, this guy's already canceled the NFL season, you know, and moved it to West
Virginia.
But Mark,
this is what they're talking about. And this is what they're talking about when the NBA and NHL does come back. The idea that your playoff, your first round of the playoffs, all the Western, let's say all the Western Conference teams playing in the playoffs will all play and hang out and stay in right. one area.
Yeah.
That's what they're talking. I mean, that's part of this. So
right.
you just said that the idea of the NFL doing that makes no sense. This is what they're talking. This is the likelihood of what's going to happen in the NBA and NHL.
Right. But I'm talking about the NFL being September and October. I mean, we're talking about trying to come back here at the end of May or 1st of June. Like a completely different scenarios, different timetables. I think desperate times, obviously, with the NBA season, the NHL season, desperate measures. I get that aspect of it, and I get that it'll be different. But I don't necessarily look at different as oh, this is going to ruin it, or it's going to ruin it. It's going to ruin my experience. No, it's just going to be a different experience. And if you can still crown a champion, I believe in crowning a champion. And hey, if you play in a 64, the NCAA tournament, I get it. It's one and done. Like, that's what I love about the NFL. Like, on any given Sunday, man, you can put a game plan together, that beats a team that's potentially better than you.
Well,
that's the key. And I would still, hey man, if it was a round robin one and done tournament, I'd be in for the NBA. I'd be in.
I'm just being realistic, and I get it. Right now, people are like, hey, bring it on, give it to me, whatever it looks like, I don't care. I'm telling you, if the Denver Nuggets are the quote unquote home team playing the Houston Rockets in front of an empty arena in Phoenix, and the Nuggets lose, people are going to be like, this sucks. This sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a bad idea. Who came up with this idea? I'm telling you, all right? I'm just forewarning you, okay?
I
people calling me a pansy. That's fine, Gary
right.
and Mead. I'm telling you. I'm forewarning you. Just remember where you first heard that this idea, if it comes to fruition, is going to suck, okay?
Okay, Mike, let me just throw this at you. All right, so I get that. Do you have any belief? Like, let's say that coronavirus never happened and we're rolling, okay? And it's you know, business as usual right now. Do you have any belief that the Denver Nuggets could get to the finals in a bunch of seven-game series? Based upon the opponents that they would have to play, the Lakers and the Clippers and the Rockets and, you know, and Dallas and whoever else.
No.
Do you believe they? No.
No.
I don't either. I don't think there's any way. I don't think they're built for a seven-game series. But if it was a round robin, one and done, do I believe that they could beat anybody on any given night? Yep. I think they would have a better chance.
Okay,
I think the Nuggets would have a better chance.
But you just said that's making my point, that you would have to completely alter the way that we normally crown a champion in the NBA in order for them to be able to win. Right away, that just shows you that it's not real. It's a mirage.
You know what's real? When they give out that ring and they give out that Larry O'Brien trophy, it's real. If you get it in that scenario, like, I love that, man. Hey, listen. Is it real? What's a team that has won a Super Bowl championship that really wasn't considered the best team in football at the time, but they won it? Why? Okay, the Philadelphia Eagles. They won it with a backup quarterback, right?
Mm-hmm.
They put it together. They should have probably lost to the Atlanta Falcons, but they found a way to eke it out at the end, and then they went on this epic run, and they ended up winning a world championship. Were they just clearly better than everybody else all season long?
Probably not, but what they did, though, was they went out and won a championship the same way that every other team before them and after them has had to go out and win a championship.
And you know what?
Nothing was altered.
Right. If the Nuggets won it, they would have won it in a tournament that everybody was playing exactly the same tournament. I don't care. Hey, man, if it means we won a championship and you want to, and every other team in the league wants to put an asterisk by it, that's fine.
Okay, just understand.
We'll just look at our rings.
Okay,
we'll just look at our rings.
Okay, just understand though that if and when the Nuggets and Avalanche come up short, immediately people are going to say, "Duh, doesn't count. Doesn't count. It's an asterisk." You know, if this was a regular tournament, they would have gone for it. I mean, it just further makes my point.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.